The main thing I wanted to take the opportunity to talk about was something that I believe happened more by accident than on purpose at Sienna College. So I'll wear that hat in most of this little talk. In Sienna College, Sienna is the Centre for Adult Education. So, and it's been around for 60 years. And for the majority of that time, the students were all adults, by virtue of the fact that it was aimed at a older people. However, 4 years ago, the CEO of the time, Denise O'Brien, started talking about things like lifelong learning and looking at how we dealt with the cohort that we had. And the second thing that happened around that time was purely for commercial reasons. There was decision made to enrol more younger people in CAE, heritage programs across the board. So at the time, 4 years ago, the average age was about students in their 40s. We had some students who were over 90 years old. There was one student in book group in the short courses who was 102 years old. And we had quite a number of people in their 60s and 70s. 4 years later, so which is around about now, the average age has been skewed a little bit because we've brought in a lot more younger people. In our VCE retail programs, we've got about 250 to 300 people who are under 21. So we've got a situation where we're in a VCE class, year 11 and year 12 class, where we've got people who are 18, 25, 35, 60, all sitting in the same class. So when you talk about intergenerational learning, it's a great little example of how it works in that particular context. So some of the, I'll come back and say a couple of things about that, but some of the challenges that happened along the way. First and foremost was the teachers. When I first started there, I remember teachers saying, you know, this is an adult education environment. We left the high school system with young people, old people sitting together. It's not going to work. But that's, like I said at the start, it happened by accident. We continued enrolling people. It was a commercial imperative. And now the teachers are quite glowing in their reports about how the whole thing's working. And basically they're saying in classes, especially, and it's not just knowledge transfer, it's actually people relating to each other and sharing ways of looking at the world and learning things from each other. And in classes like, and it's not like mentoring how to build a group workshop, but in classes like year 12 psychology, philosophy classes, the young people and the old people, as a manager, they can come to me saying, you know, we get real value out of these different generations having their input into some really heavy discussions in the classroom. So that's one of the benefits that happened. There's something else that happened was we got a retail cohort of about 120 students, and one day we had some U3A learners, and for those who don't know, U3A learners is the University of the Third Age, the younger people, and we were doing some digital literacy training with them. Next door was a retail learner for young kids who were like totally dropouts from school, like real troublemakers, and they're swearing and playing cards and things. The older people in the U3A were getting upset by this. But I remember that a week later, 2 weeks later, the two groups were together. The young people were teaching the older people how to use the technology, and the older people were joining them in their card games in the little kitchen area that we have. So it's another example of how intergenerational learning helped out with this. Putting the two groups together in that cohort. The other thing that happened in that transition from the 4 years was the whole idea of adult learning. So we decided, and out of everything that happened, I reckon this was my main contribution to the whole thing, was I started talking about adult learning not being an age concept, but it's an approach to learning. And this is where my ALA hat comes on as well, because in working with Sally, who's the CEO, and people like Barry and anyway, one thing I've said is the adult learning approach has helped so many youth across Victoria, you know, people who've fallen through the traditional system of education, coming to places like CAE, neighbourhood housing and things, and actually getting their year 12 and getting the certificates. So we're shifting the idea that it's age-based concept to, it's an approach to learning, where it's based on things like the learning environment, the relationships between people, so those are a couple of examples of how things are happening at CAE College, more by accident than approach, because there's no systems around it, there's no documentation. I've been involved in meetings at the leadership team level about rolling out these sorts of ideas and concepts. So, thanks.
Okay, so I guess just responding to the question that we've got here, and I'm sort of speaking from a volunteering perspective as well as educational, which is the timing, that I just believe, and talking from the older generation, that it just gives people a sense of purpose, a reason to actually get up and have something to do, particularly if they've been suffering from any sort of health issues, help them get back on their feet again. And the social aspect of it all, because as we get a little bit older, people drop off, and like friendship-wise, and family sometimes isn't around. So just getting out there and interacting with other people, I think that's a very big thing. Reducing the stress and anxiety levels as well, with that sense of purpose to actually get out there and be doing something. I believe that it could also be very rewarding, because if somebody's going to be going back into the education field and they haven't done it for quite some time, they probably feel quite proud of themselves that they've been able to actually achieve the outcomes. And then with the cross-generation, very similar to my presentation before, is that seeing the younger generation working with the older generation is fantastic, building those relationships and watching them blossom as well, so to speak. Just talking about the VCAL students as well, we ran a couple of these programs with them, and these students don't quite fit into the mainstream of high school and can be a little bit disruptive and whatnot, but out of all the schools that we've run Gizmo with, they were the best students to work with. So it was quite a surprising outcome there. But they were very respectful to the older participants, and it all worked quite well. And as I said, we've worked with private schools as well, and I actually found that those students were a lot better to work with. Yeah, and that's probably...
Okay, so I'm from the National Seniors Productive Ageing Centre. So we're the research arm of National Seniors Australia, which is a members-based organisation representing about 200,000 people aged 50 and over throughout Australia. And over the last few years, we've done quite a deal of research looking at caregiving of senior Australians, in particular for their grandchildren. And some research that was done for us by the University of Adelaide valued the in-kind support given by senior Australians to young generations at about $30 billion per year. So obviously we're not here just to talk about the monetary value of things, but we think of, the savings for government expenditure for in terms of caregiving, that is very significant. And so I guess something we always emphasise is the extent of in-kind support that senior Australians provide for not just grandchildren, but also for their children as well. So I guess we always seek to have this recognised, and we do feel that there can be at times some financial stresses on older Australians in providing such caregiving, and perhaps there's greater scope for the government to provide some kind of financial relief in that area. And we're also quite interested in caregiving of, what we call the younger senior Australians, so say those in their 50s and 60s, for their parents or for a spouse who has an illness or a disability. And one area we're particularly interested in is those people who are still in the labour force. Those who have full-time jobs, obviously, it's very difficult for them to provide quite extensive care for a parent, for example, who may have been quite frail or have multiple chronic illnesses. And so something we really emphasise is that I think that this intergenerational care giving could be, I think, is somewhat prevented from happening, from, I guess, being recurring as much as it could because of inflexible policies in the labour market. More flexible working arrangements, I think, would allow many seniors who are still working to be able to provide greater care for their parents, for example. I guess that I just wanted to sort of make a few points around the caregiving issues, because as we have an ageing population and the greater, I suppose, encouragement by the government for people to work longer, we're going to see some of these issues have a much greater emphasis in public discourse going forward.
Right. I suppose I come at this primarily as someone who studies adult aging, so that's pretty much everything from midlife onwards. And the big thing that strikes me is that most people talk about the demographic shift. So we all know there are more older people around. We've moved from, if you think about traditional society and you think of the shape of the generation, traditional society is more or less a triangular shape with lots of children at the bottom coming up to a sort of point at the top with a few wise elders. And what we've really done is we've turned into a situation where it's much more of a column, so you can think of it moving from your triangle to your column. And what that does is it means that each generation is approximately the same size. Now, that's historically a new situation for us. So whilst you see in the newspapers and so on a lot about the demographic shift, the change in population, actually the thing that we're facing is a cultural shift. How do we adapt culturally to a situation where there are many more of different generations around? Which means that each has to take a particular role, make a contribution in society. So the question then arises, well, what contribution? And we've seen a shift, really, if we look at social policy and so on. We started in the middle 20th century to think of aging as pretty much a period of dependency. And then for a brief moment, sunlight, there was this period where it was a period of leisure and active aging. For those of you who ever looked at sociology know that there was a thought in the 60s as well that we would develop. As machines did more, people would do less, and we'd all have lots of leisure to go and be leisure. It didn't work out like that. It hasn't really worked out like that when you look at what policy is saying around aging either. So whilst there are people who can afford a leisure, active, sea change type lifestyle, the main push in policy nowadays is to continue working for as long as possible. So that extra period of life, that gift of a long life that we're being given, is being filled with these policy imperatives and elsewhere, whether or not there's decent work they're available or not. So it's in that context that we have to address the role, I think, of learning and well-being across the generation. And the main, how am I doing for time? A couple more minutes. So the main question is, what spaces can we get? How can we create these spaces where generations can come together and cooperate with each other rather than compete with each other? Because the priority of saying everybody must work longer, whether it's true or not, does tend to, in the public mind, say, well, we're competing for jobs, we're competing across generations. In actual fact, the economists, which I'm not, I'm a social psychologist, but the economists will tell you that there's a thing called the lump of labour. And the lump of labour says that there's a zero-sum game. The more jobs you take from here, if you give the jobs to folk here, you take them away from folk here. Actually, economies don't work like that. They don't work like that at all. And what we find is that, in fact, economies that find a productive role for older people also have less youth unemployment. So there's something else going on, and don't be fooled by that idea. Having said that, I think we really need to ask the question, given that we've been given this gift of a long life, do we really want to spend all of it in routine work, in casual work, in work that perhaps doesn't give us the possibilities to develop the potential that we have as human beings? So I think really, I'm not going to give specific examples, but I will say that means that this space, this idea of how we learn, what contribution we make to society from different generational groups is essential for moving forward, as we move forward through the 21st century.